Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, it is the Final Word Show. It is Monday. Welcome to the Redmen TV. I am Paul Machen. I'm joined by Steve Hall, by James Redmond and by Ross Chanley for this one. 1-0 away at Sheffield United. I had an absolutely belted of a time today. Lovely city, Sheffield, and even sweeter when you come away with 3 points that you probably didn't deserve.
It was a strange game, wasn't it? Without being too Liverpool-centric on this show, which we obviously will be.
What, on the Redmen TV? Yeah. The YouTube channel dedicated entirely to Liverpool football.
Go figure that we're going to talk Liverpool up. But sometimes you've got to just praise the opposition. And yeah. I think we were off it. We were like probably at 70%. But I think the fact that they were really, really good and really well organised made it look worse than it probably was. We had no space. We had nowhere to play the ball. It just didn't look right from the first minute. You could just tell, like, the shape of them was better than the shape of us, if that makes sense. You know, there was gaps everywhere there was just space, but like no one in them to pass it to. It was very, very odd. They done a job on us, and a bit of luck, and there you go. And then it's one of those that you'll just kind of, one of those 1-0s that you'll just kind of forget about that down the line. You go, oh yeah, remember that happened.
No one will ever remember, I think he's right there, Dave, no one will ever remember how we went about achieving this. Yeah. Well, we will, you know, when we yeah. think back, but in the wider scheme of things, this is just going to be another W, another yeah. whatever you want to call it on the list of fixtures.
Yeah, pretty much. Listen, like if this is a few years ago, we probably don't go ahead and win that game. The 100%. Fact now that we've actually gone into the game, we haven't played to the best that we can. And in fact, it fills me with more confidence, because now if I see Liverpool go into another game like this and they don't have the greatest start, I know that we can still get a goal out of nothing, and we can still scrape a result. We still can keep clean sheets. All these things add up into one. So there's having a good performance, but then if you can have a clean sheet, not playing so great. If you can still score goals, not playing so great, then these things are going to play in your favour. Mm-hmm. And this is just something that you can see Jürgen Klopp has implemented into our teams compared to what we were like a few years ago when we were still developing.
Absolutely, 100%. I've seen this so many times. And we're going to dive into it more in a second. But just want to let you know, this podcast is brought to you in association with The Athletic. You can get over there, theathletic.co.uk/TheRedmenTV is your code. Get 50% off your yearly subscription. Fantastic writing, including from James Pearce, who actually broke the wonderful potential, well, depends on how you look at it, story that Liverpool could get kicked out of the Carabao Cup, which we all woke up to with a shock and surprise this week, and a whole host of other brilliant things as well. Some talk about Gini Wijnaldum and him being dismayed that Andy Robertson not being more highly rated at the best awards, etc, etc. But yeah, brilliant writing from James Pearce, from Si Hughes, and the best football sports writers on the planet right now. No annoying ads or pop-ups, and as I say, you can get 50% off your yearly subscription rate by using the code that we'll put in the description underneath this video and podcast. Yes, Ross, it shouldn't be underestimated, but it was the end of 4 away games on the spin, and I think by and large we've come through pretty well in that, and it's they weren't necessarily the toughest opponents we'll have to face in those games, Napoli notwithstanding. But it shouldn't be underestimated. You don't often get spells like that in seasons. Four away games where we've had to juggle things. We've had different teams. We've had to go, it upsets your preparation for these games as well. So to come out at the end of it, particularly having not dropped any points in the league, I think is massive.
Yeah, it is massive. And I think some of them are really difficult. I think we've had to adapt our style of play for some of those as well. Like, I know we're talking about Sheffield there. Like, same with the Newcastle game, which I know was at home, but when you're playing these low block sides, I think we've had to change how we play. Mm-hmm. I think it's like we didn't click, but I think we have to suss out the opposition first and see what they want to do.
Yeah.
And like I was like this at the Newcastle game as well, of like thinking where's like the speed in the build up play or the penetration or trying to force it, but you know, we've had these games a million times before, and it's not come off. We're trying to rush the build-up play. And I think having these, like you said, these away games, I think we tactically we've adapted that as well, and we've come through this. Even Napoli, we played really well.
Yeah,
it was just a poor result.
What I would say is that, you know, and you're right in what you say, Ross, that we you know, took our time and stuff, and I think we all agree we were at it, but we created in the first half two sitter chances.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It wasn't like we did absolutely nothing. Mane has two. He's just, you know, the ball at the top of Van Dijk, that's a sitter, and then he misses from 2 yards out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So we weren't playing great, but we. And they again, they defended quite well.
But like before,
but we still cut them open on two separate occasions. By what you said, We were patient. That would play around, and then Van Dijk spots the run and goes. And on the second one, you know, to break, and it's after it's probably one or two passes too many.
We've wanked that to death, haven't we?
A little bit, yeah. And then at the end, but Mane should score. You know, it's an absolute sitter. So I think that's important as well, is that we did have to cut an edge to an extent. It wasn't like we created absolutely zilch and. We never looked like scoring. I thought we did, again. But when you miss those two big chances, something in the back of your head can go, oh, it is one of those days. But I don't think this Liverpool team have one of those days.
It's you know, absolutely, and that's weird because for us, because we've had those days far too many times, haven't we, Ross, down the years? And like James referenced it there, you the same. Where I'm normally sat here, and I have done so many times and said, to win them games, you either need a massive slice of luck, or you need a piece of brilliance. Yeah. So it used to be Phil Coutinho would rattle one in off the bar, Or someone goes in off someone does, and we'd actually had that because obviously Gini Wijnaldum's goal, which we'll come on to later, is a massive slice of luck. But Steve's dead right. There's three big chances in that game. And you put your outs on Mane and Salah, between them, at least putting one of those in the back of the net. And that was the difference. We weren't great. They caused us problems. They defended really well. But we still carved open more than enough opportunities to win.
Yeah, the thing I was trying to compare it to was like Burnley a couple of years ago, where we have like 20-odd shots, you know, half on target, and we're having pop shots from 25, 30 yards, because that's what we're used to.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like you said, it's more patient now with the build-up play there. But I'm not used to that as a fan, because I'm thinking first 25 minutes, like, hurry up. But it's all part of our tactical change that we made of, you know, breaking teams down physically and mentally, of passing the ball around. And I agree with Steve as well. I think you do have to give credit to Sheffield. You know, our front three weren't on fire, but then our back four or five were. I thought in large parts of that game, again, we've had to adapt that as well, from not having a defence 3-4 years ago to going to games like that now, where Burnley would hit us on the counter-attack. We lost 2-0, I think, that game, didn't we? Or when we absolutely battered them. Whereas that's the other side of it as well. We've got a defence that can shore up when needed.
I think... Usually when I see teams play five at the back against us, I'm like, bring it on. We tend to do it. I might be wrong, but we tend to do it. I remember Spurs doing it 10 o'clock, and we just absolutely obliterated them
because
they couldn't get near Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Well, moreover that, you know, you go back like a couple of seasons now when that became the en vogue formation for teams in the Premier League, didn't it? I think it was after
Chelsea,
Conte brought it in with Chelsea, and all of a sudden half the teams in the league had it, and we developed a formation, I think, that worked really well against that team.
It was essentially Trent and Robertson had all day, and then we'd get good, you know, good deliveries and what have you, and we'd take it apart. But the way Sheffield did it was, they were more, their fullbacks that cover so well, and they cover so much ground, and their centre halves who do, you know, the overlaps and stuff, and they were everywhere. Is that
I'm gutted that I was behind the goal, because everyone's been going on about this overlapping centre half. So I got a message off a mate of mine to say, oh, watch out for this. And of course, you've got zero depth perception when you're behind the goal.
They did a couple of times, but they didn't do it nearly as much as they have done in the Championship. But they made themselves be able to get to Trent and to Robertson fast. You know, I don't think either of those two had an... I listened to your play ratings, I think you gave them both sixes, and I think that was about right, is that... Those two, in that, when you're playing against the five, your wing-backs then become your creative players almost. They've got the space, but because Sheffield did such a good job closing them down, and because both of them were probably not quite at the races, Robertson especially, it just made it all look a little bit disjointed, because it pops into Fabinho, and then you've got Wijnaldum and Henderson, they're not really going to cut open a team. That isn't what they're in the team for. The full-backs are the creativity.
That was the game. For me, it felt like it's we'll come on to some comments and stuff. In fact, I'll go straight to it, because I think it's actually a really pertinent point. The man of me, it said in the YouTube comments, This game highlighted our only and biggest weakness. When teams defend in numbers like Sheffield United, did you need dynamic, attacking, driving, creative midfielders? These are not qualities our midfielders are known for. The difference is why Man City batter low-quality teams and we struggle at times. And I think it's more nuanced than that, because I think Henderson does drive and Wijnaldum does drive. But I think the base point there is perfect, is that we needed lads who were just better than small spaces in that situation, who were a bit braver, prepared to take a man on. It's a Naby Keita
or Oxlade-Chamberlain. What I would say is that I agree is that when you're playing against well organised, disciplined teams, someone has to be brave enough to go past that player, because the second he goes past one, their shape breaks down, because someone else has got to come out and then it breaks up. And in fairness, no one did it until the second half, and it was our centre half who started doing it. And I don't think it was a coincidence that as soon as Joel Matip started taking lads on, we did look a bit more likely. Because,
well, to be fair, I noted on the instant match action, Bobby Firmino starts doing it.
When he goes number 10 as well. Yeah.
Before, in the first half, he drops a bit deeper a couple of times and he looks to just get involved, and it shakes things up. Because, I mean, Jay's up to that point, whether it was our game plan or it was us in the face of Sheffield United's game plan, the ball would go to Trent always.
Yeah.
And he'd look up and he'd just have basically no one to pass to, and that was the constant cycle of what we would do. Normally Trent can either play a little give and go.
Yeah.
We were just playing loads of like blind balls. We weren't creating anything from Trent having the ball.
I do think that like it was a bit of a mix of how we was playing, but I actually think Sheffield United, I'm still learning their players' names, with all due respect to Sheffield, like that's how good they've done, but they've done good by setting up right for the teams that they're playing against. So coming against, you look back at the Chelsea game when they drew 2-2 with them. Second half, going at half-time, the manager's saying exactly what they need to do to just get a result out of that game. And they still play well the whole entire match, but they just conceded two goals in the first half. Against us, the manager's basically saying, don't give these respect. Just because these are the best team in Europe or best team in the league at the minute, don't be giving these no respect. If anything, that should make you go out there and do this, this and this. Yeah. And he's basically cancelling out everything that he saw from Liverpool good. And he's basically saying, right, see them fullbacks, they can cause problems. Make sure that they don't cause any problems. Obviously in a bit more detail, but that's what he's solely focusing on. And when you do eliminate them strong qualities within a team, so one of our strong qualities is the fullbacks. That's where we get a lot of our goals. It's like, it kind of surprises you. And the fact we were still able to overcome that and still surpass that and still get the 3 points, I think just shows the level of our team, because another day that can be a very different result.
It looked to me like, I might be wrong, again, I imagine Chris might look at this on his show, I'm not sure, but it looked like they were saying, like, we closed the fullbacks down, we're happy to let Matip and Virgil van Dijk have the ball, and as they fired it in, as soon as it went into Firmino or to Mane or to Salah, they were right up them. And we're just going to be close, and you know what? We'll leave that space in behind, and if Van Dijk puts one on a sixpence and they score, we'll accept it. And it nearly worked.
Well, it's a small pitch, isn't it? Yeah. You know, and that's why our tactic, it meant Mo Salah toils a bit, because where's he running? Where's he running to? You know, they've got loads of they get back in numbers, they get on his toes.
Give a bit of a booting.
And to be fair, exactly, and to be fair, the balls, if you want to get him in behind, have to be inch perfect, and they've just gone, go ahead, just try it.
That's the thing, you have to pick your poison. You're not going to just be able to keep Liverpool out for 90 minutes doing everything right. They basically said, if you're going to score, we want it to be with the ball behind us, and we hope that something goes wrong. And again, it nearly works for us, and Van Dijk spotted early, and Mane should score. It's a bad miss. And if that goes in, then it is a completely different game. But I thought what was interesting in terms of looking at it from a Liverpool point of view is that I don't think our passing was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was like half a yard here, a bad first touch there, and it's a bit slow because you know you're taking too many touches. And you were there. I was watching on TV, and like a show Klopp, and you see him move the ball faster. And because even if it's a half a yard off, and someone's got to take an extra little touch here and there, or you know, there's one where it gets fired out to Robertson, and it bounces off him, and that isn't us.
That was the thing that got me, Ross, is because I don't know what the excuse is there. I mean, early kickoff thing or whatever, but this is a team that had the week off. You know, these lads so it's not fatigue, it's not mental fatigue, it's early in the season, all that kind of stuff. It was a bit, you know, I think credit to Sheffield United for that, but Steve's right, I just think it was sloppy. You know, Liverpool were making their own mistakes in the first half.
It's 12:30 kickoffs. It's the only thing I can think of because it's happened earlier on the season already. But you're right, they're having a week off. I was thought they'd be fit and firing, bang up for this one, kind of come out the traps, but they didn't. I don't know if that's a tactical thing of, you know, the penetration in the first half. But you can't make any excuses for some of the touches because they've been in training all week. Or maybe because they've had extra time off because they didn't go to MK Dons. And maybe you lose that rhythm a little bit because, you know, before that they played two games a week, hadn't they, and stuff like that. So
it's weird. Like, it's almost like... like an epidemic, almost like one bad pass and one bad touch, and that's spreading throughout the team. Yeah. And I don't know what the reason is, but maybe it was lack of rhythm, or like you say, the early kick off.
We fought four away games as well, like you said, only they take part in one of them as well. But like having that routine of like being at home every now and then, give you that confidence boost going back in.
Yeah, it could be something very simple, couldn't it? It could just be one of those days, and there's nothing to it. But I always feel it happens in a lot of different sports as well as that. When one player makes one mistake, sometimes it can then spread throughout the team. Everyone gets a little bit anxious or something because we don't pass like that. Mm. We're not that slow. We don't move the ball that slow. We don't take bad first touches. We're usually zipping, you know, moving them around. And to be fair, again, Sheffield United's shape was really good, but I think we made it easier for them. And that usually when we come up against a good team, we were pressing us and we would just pop it around them.
Yeah.
And only once or twice in the first half where we really... getting past it, otherwise it was a bit slow.
Well, it's credit to Sheffield United as well, though, isn't it, for their style of play? But following what Jay said before, one of the good things afterwards I thought about was like we struggled in that game, but they'll cause other teams problems, and more importantly, teams around us. So they'll go there and hopefully have the same sort of issue because of the way that they set up.
No, I think it's an interesting point, but I think James Steve's right in that, and he mentioned it slightly earlier as well, that it spreads, the one misplaced pass spreads, but what it needed is it goes the other way too. And we saw this against MK Dons when James Milner starts taking people on. He starts taking their fullbacks on and whatever. Yeah. And then Curtis Jones goes, oh, go on, I'll try a little bit of that. And I think that's what Roberto Firmino did in the first half. He did more of them when we changed formation. But Joel Matip was one of those players who goes, no, go on, I'll grab this game here and I'll show people. Because that's what, in those games where space is tight, when you're under pressure, when you're getting beat and you're not having loads of time on the ball, just one lad just turning someone or bursting past, it kind of leads the way for the rest of the team.
Yeah, you kind of notice things within a game, like even us who've played like 11-a-side games, not at a professional level, you still notice like things in a game that you can think, oh yeah, there's a lot of space there, I need to start getting into there a bit more. Yeah. Or just little things like that, and that's what Joel Matip must have saw. He just must have looked at it and thought, do you know what, I can drive forward here because these aren't really pressing me. These are just making sure that the fullbacks are not causing any problems.
But it wasn't like he was striding unopposed.
Yeah.
He was like battling his way through.
He was full on going for it. So brave.
Yeah,
100%. And it weren't even because there was a weakness in Sheffield's team. He just believes in his own ability, which top players need to do more often. Because at the end of the day, if you believe in your ability and what you can do well, then you can go forward and help your team win. And when he started doing that, it started to click a little bit more. Yeah.
Sorry, two seconds. Just a comment then from Barry Graham, who says Matip was a monster, winning every challenge, bringing the ball out from the back and running through their midfield, even playing some defence splitting passes. He's the best player of the day. Match of the Day did a big focus on him as well in terms of his passing, Steve.
Yeah.
He was tremendous, and I've heard a few people say it, but if we'd spent £60 million on him in the summer, we'd be saying, look what a bargain we've picked up here.
I know, I must admit, I didn't read the comment there before. I was about to pick up on his passing. It wasn't just the running with the ball that was, and he was really good at that, because what that does, in effect, him running with the ball gets Trent Arnold in space, because he beats someone comes in, and then no one's behind Trent, and more often than not, he gets there, stops and passes to Trent, and that's his job. Mm-hmm. But while they were in such a good shape, he was pinging balls into Firmino, he was pinging balls in, and listen, it didn't always work, but we got a couple of free kicks from it, and it was that thing I was saying before, was when it was a bit slow, he was looking, going, you know what, I could give it to Van Dijk, and he'll give it to Henderson, and it'll go there and there, you know what, no, I'll just get it forward. I'll get it. My job is to get the ball to our free.
Trust your best players.
Give it to the best lads. Neither their goal. It's not rocket science. But it wasn't just the fact that he was doing it. It was how he was doing it. Again, we were talking about space is limited on that pitch. It's a small pitch and they were quite compact and they had it all boxed off. But he was firing balls past two or three legs straight into feet. And he was almost the one who was like the catalyst to get us just moving forward a little bit quicker. You know, Van Dijk's passing was off a little bit at times. You know, he lost his radar a little bit, but Matip was, I think, you know, I thought he was our best player. I know on TV, I think Steve McManaman gave it to their centre-half, fair enough, but I thought Matip was the best player on the pitch, and I think he's probably been our best player for the last couple of games.
Yeah.
He is in really good form, and like I say, everyone was crying out at times for Liverpool to bin Lovren off and buy a new lad, and you know, we didn't need to, did we really? If this lad is this good, he's not as talented as Virgil van Dijk, because I don't think anyone in the world is. But I think he's playing on a similar level right now. Yeah. I don't think you can... You're splitting hairs.
This is a game, Steve, that a year ago, we'd have all been saying put Lovren in for this one. Because you come up against a bit, you know, big that McBurney's a big physical lad, isn't he? Looking to cause problems. They're going to go a bit more direct. This had Lovren written all over it because you want him up there booming headers away and, you know, getting really stuck into things. Whereas it's a testament to Matip that you now... Because you wouldn't have put him in these games because you thought he might have been a bit soft. You know, maybe a bit weak for exactly. Whereas now you can see that's where we're at. That's the level that Liverpool are playing at now, where you've got the physical commitment, but also Matip's got the talent that can dictate the game from the back as well.
Yeah, so not only can he play footy, but he can get stuck in
it as well.
I've said on the show a couple of years ago, and I don't know how often I've repeated this, that I always thought like he was a good home team player. You know, you play him at Anfield against the lesser team. I'd never have wanted them going to Burnley away or you know, Sheffield United away or any of these teams where you think, you know, it might be a bit of a challenge physically.
Yeah.
But he was more than capable, and he should be. He's absolutely massive. I know he's a bit gangly and stuff, isn't he? But there's no way that he should have been getting bullied by those strikers in the past that gave him a bit of a going over. It was always odd because physically he shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether it's a change of tactics, just confidence, having the best defender in the world next year, or a combination of all three. But now he's like, he's right into them, and he's clever where he fouls. You know, I always thought Lovren was dozy where he fouled. He would get stuck up someone 5 yards away from our goal, from our box, whereas Matip will do it 10, 15 yards out, and he'll just take someone out if he needs to, you know, stop the game. He's turned into a really streetwise centre-half, and I don't think that was... Well, I never saw that when we first signed him. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, we signed a decent little lad for free, he'll be all right. He's turned into like, you know, who's better than him in the Premier League at the minute? Maybe the fella standing next to him. And that might be about it on current form, which is, you know, again, free signings go, we always, you know, James Milner's the gold standard, isn't he? I mean, Matip's playing better now than Milner's ever played for Liverpool. Like, in terms of, he's hitting nines, like, 3, 4, 5 games on the run. I think it's an amazing, not only an amazing sign, it's an amazing testament to Liverpool's coaching, because he's clearly improved.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's unfair on him if you just put it down to he's playing next to Virgil. Yeah. I think that's not fair on him. He deserves credit, and the coaches deserve credit.
Yeah, 100%. It was an odd game, because I think we've seen a few comments like this, Ross, but you've got GSP video here saying, great result in the end, but none of our midfielders tries to run with the ball and dribble past the opposition, just side to side, non-stop passing, doesn't create space for other players. We've had a lot of that in the last few years, and it's eternally going to be the criticism, but it's right, is that it was a game where I thought Fabinho could have done a bit more, I think Henderson could have done more, I think Wijnaldum could have done a bit more, and I wonder whether... Because you see it from Matip and you see it from Firmino, and is this just a case of, because I was banging this drum pre-MK Dons actually on Twitch with Chris, that I think when we've got Keita fit and Oxlade-Chamberlain fit, I don't think people understand what our team's going to be, because I don't think we've seen, until you see midfield with Fabinho, Keita and Oxin, I don't think we can truly understand what Jürgen's plan is for Liverpool. But we had to change it to 4-2-3-1. We put Bobby Firmino in more of a 10. And do you think that's that kind of knock? We don't have those players properly available to us yet. So we had to find another way to get people moving with the ball. Matip starts striding forward and Firmino just putting him a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I think you've got to use the tools that you've got, haven't you? Obviously, if Keita was fit, I think we probably would all start him that game. But it's also dead hard when, like we said, with those games before that we played, we tried that and teams fit us on the counter-attack. So you've got to worry about your defence as well. I think Firmino is probably that one that we probably have got, although he's not the out and out because he's normally a nine, but as soon as he drops deep, people don't want to take him on. And not only that, he takes people out of...
He doesn't waste touches.
No, but he takes people out of their area as well. So, like, you know, if you're taking the defender out of position, and then you get your runners in behind, excuse me, because that's what we have to do. Henderson isn't the person to do, you know, like a rondo or a step over or something like that, because that's just not his style of play. So we don't have any other options. I think, you know, it all comes back to Sheffield United. If they've seen that and gone, well, we'll just push them out wide and they can knock crosses in all day, because that's bread and butter to them, because they'll eat it up. But again, credit to Klopp for dropping him. And Origi, when he came on as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
He was probably the only one, you know, he was only on for, what, 20 minutes or something. But he was one of those doing step overs and cutting in and taking people on.
Absolutely.
I think, I don't know, I agree with the point. We did look like we needed more dynamism in the field, and I think that is the game Keita will play. You know, when Keita's been fit, he's played at Burnley away, he's went to Palace away, and he starts those games, which is a testament to Klopp wants that. But to say, you know, Wijnaldum and Henderson didn't skip pass plays, yeah, because that isn't, they're not any good at that. So it's what I say, go and beat a man. But if he gets tackled on the halfway line and we lose the, and they go up to the end and score, everyone's going, the fucking hell, you know, I don't want Jordan Henderson trying to be three players because he won't be able to do it very well. Yeah. It isn't his game. It's like, you know, I don't want Adrian doing it because it's not, he's a goal. You know, it's not his game, and that's the thing, is that you Klopp can only,
because they can't do that doesn't make them lesser footballers.
It means that's not their job.
Just
yeah.
stick to what I don't want
Sadio Mane playing centre back. You know, because he's not going to win. You know, it's one of those. Just that
he probably would.
Yeah, he'd be all right. He'd do a job. But Henderson and Wijnaldum, they don't really possess that in their game. That isn't what makes them good players. What makes them good players is what they're good at. So I agree with the point. But Klopp's just playing the hand he's been dealt.
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's the point.
But then you've got to find another way to win.
That's the point we're kind of driving at, because unfortunately, I haven't come up. It's weird because the MK Dons game, we talked about it last week, about it was a bit too late. We needed our players to have had that game to make them ready, but they've all gone and played that game, and then Keita's obviously still not quite ready. Oxlade-Chamberlain, not quite ready. Lallana's gone and done a big shift there as well. So all the lads who are the ones who are slightly better on the ball, you know, slightly less so Lallana, I'm putting him alongside Keita than that because he hasn't got those legs anymore, but those lads have all gone and put a big shift in midweek, so you don't have them available. So you're right, we've had to go and find a slightly different way. But James, I
this is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I thought it was a very canny move to switch to 4-2-3-1, because even like the Salah factor, I know he misses that. He has that absolute sitter that's handed to him on a plate when he goes clean through. But that was a game where, and we saw this time last year, we switched that formation for the little spell. When it's going to be tight, you're going to play against low block sides who are going to try and bully you out of it. Makes sense to put Salah in those kind of positions, because he should. He doesn't, not evidenced by the weekend, but he's the kind of lad who's going to put those chances away.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you've got to change the team up every once in a while, because if you just go with the same thing every week, bearing in mind in that time you've got to be rotating players and stuff like that, you'd have got to kind of go with a different approach. And like we were talking about before, how Sheffield approached us in the game, you've kind of got to improvise while you're actually playing against them as well, because you can clearly see Klopp didn't set up obviously we still won the game, but based on performance, we didn't set up like the right way. Sheffield still was able to get in behind our defence and still break us down, so we did have to change that throughout the game, and that's just what good teams have to do. You have to improvise and you just have to fight through them.
There's a couple of, just a few more key points on this. Ross, Mane should have a pen. It was funny because we shout for it. It was right in front of us. You can't tell. You know, I messaged Chris, who obviously watched it on the telly, and he said, I don't know whether the coverage originally said, like, nah, it's not a pen, because he said it doesn't, apparently it's not, and then when I watched it back, obviously, after the fact, you see the definitive angles, don't you? So I just saw in the highlights, they showed the one angle where it's a pen. It's a pen all day long. And here we are once again. We're going to do it, aren't we? Is that a subjective decision?
This is part of the problem, though. Why is it a subjective decision? Why can't someone just look back at that and go, actually, it's a penalty, change it?
See, I didn't think it was a pen, if I'm honest. Jamie, I thought... Mane's...
Well, there we go, that's why it's a
that's what I'm saying, subjective. It looked to me more like Mane's swinging foot kind of caught the lad, rather than the lad catching him. It was kind of like a coming together. When I first saw it, I thought pen, but then not one of our lads really shouted. I mean, Andy Robertson has a bit of a go, but Mane's not up in arms and everyone else isn't up in arms. And then I think that's what the commentators, again, what Chris is referring to on your text, sorry, is that they were like, oh no, I don't know. It didn't look like one. I think maybe he got the ball and then you look at it. And to be fair...
He doesn't get the ball,
but then it's like...
But the foot's still up from
the foot's high and manic. I don't think it's an absolute one where you say, if the ref gives it, I don't think VAR overchanges it. You know what I mean? I think it's what, again, yeah, they've kind of stuck with referees' call, which, again, we've gone through that to death on this show loads of times in the past, but I think that's one where you do go with what the ref says, because I don't think it is, like, bang on the clear and obvious thing. Again, you know, in Naples, for example, that lad dived. That's clear and obvious. That's a dive. But I don't think this was one where you definitively... Again, people might disagree with me.
Oh, yeah, well, please let us know
and absolutely...
Go on, Ross.
It's consistent in the fact that the Joel Matip headlock wasn't a penalty, then that's clearly not a penalty, isn't it?
Yeah,
Like you do need to at least just go over this. I understand that you want to make the referees look good. I get that. You don't want to make them look shit. If they make a decision, you kind of want to stick with it. You want to keep the flow of the game going as well.
But it's not about the referees, though, is it?
You should probably just have a week...
I don't know.
..where they let the VAR officials... like run riot and let them make those decisions, because I we'll see what they do, because my suspicion is they're protecting us from five penalties a match, yeah, because unfortunately, as we've seen in its usage in the past, everything looks like a penalty in slow motion, you know, when you by and large, you know, when you slow it down and you see, and you can see there's contact, because, you know, they're doing it with the offside and they're doing it with handball, you know, do it with handballs. Well, you know, the Man City Spurs one, like, you know, that they're going by the absolute letter of the law. It's very easy to make those decisions, I think, and I wonder whether that's the overall mandate there. They're just going, oh God, let's just not get lost in all this. But I just think it'd be fucking hilarious, because if they just let it happen,
6-5.
Honestly, I think it'd go mad, and everyone would probably either go, but this is what we asked for, okay, great, or everyone would go, ah, yeah, okay, fine, let's wind it in a bit. But yeah, I mean, Steve, you thought it wasn't, it tells you every reason
they fucked
why.
Up implementing that VAR, though, like, into the whole Premier League, in my opinion. I feel like it just...
Well, it's just an offside machine at the moment, isn't
it?
Which is fine. I don't mind, because...
Just advertise, is that? Yeah. Just say to them, you know what, all we're going to do, we're only going to check offsides. Anything else, we're just going to leave it to the ref. Because
like penalties
that's what they're doing anyway, and it just makes people angry in that. Well, why isn't VAR?
We're going to need, Jays, a moment where I think... Like the Merseyside derby years ago, when Phil Neville handballs Lucas Leiva's shot on the line, and I mean, to be fair, he gets sent off and we get a penalty for that. But I think there's gonna have to be a moment like that the referee misses, and then the final will be there. Well, hang on a second, if VAR's not given that, then what's the point?
I get it. I think Steve just made a good point. I just think it needs to be a bit more specific. I feel like for example, goal line technology, that was brilliant when it got added to the game, in my opinion, because obviously it solves literally every situation where you think it could be a goal, and you can clearly tell if it is or it's not. Obviously, there's the centimetre ones and stuff that can be, but in the main, it gets it right enough every time. Not all technology is going to work every time, whereas VAR, it's just so up and down, and it just pisses so many fans off. And yeah, we're even talking here, like, we don't even, like Steve said, it's not a penalty, you said it was, I think it is, but there's that mixture of different opinions, and obviously that's just football in general, but it could just be for offside, and if it is just a millimetre offside, then it's offside, in my opinion. But when it comes to stuff like fouls, that's a game of opinions, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just ruining the flow of the game, and it's not fully prepared.
Absolutely. One moment, which I think we can all agree on, their goalkeepers had an absolute shocker there. Ross Giri Wijnaldum scores from But it's not the worst shot of the game. Ben, did you say that? I heard it said anyway. It's not the greatest of shots. It's on target. He's done his job. He's put the ball on target. And Man United's on loan.
Yep.
Young goalkeeper. Drops it through his legs.
It's nice watching other goalkeepers make mistakes, isn't it? Glorious. Routine. You can take your chances, don't you? Genie has a not a very good ratio of shots on target, does he? So it does go in and you're made up and that's all it took. But the funny thing was, the amount of players of Sheffield United just fell to the floor. Like all that graft and stuff that they put in, I didn't feel sorry for them, but it's hard to watch. But yeah.
Oh, from a look, from a human perspective, those things happen. You do, don't you? And you can see it in Chris Wilder's post-match when he doesn't come out and defend the goalkeeper. He's brutal. He just says, look, you can't be making mistakes like that. If you've got ambition, if you want to be a top goalkeeper, you're going to have to bounce back, all this and that. He's gutted, Steve, because we might go on and score, because that's the butterfly effect and all that kind of stuff. We might just go and score anyway. But he'll be looking at that, and the way he'll be selling that is that's a draw that our goalkeeper's cost us there, he's absolutely spot on with
it. Yeah, he is, yeah. We've lived that life, haven't we? It's one of them, is that I always think against, it sounds like I'm being patronising here, but when you're playing against a lesser team or someone who you're better than, and again, Liverpool are better than Sheffield United, you're always hoping that it's either your bit of skill or one of them, they'll make a mistake. Or, they'll get fatigued and someone will just switch off or make a silly foul or whatever. The mistake this time was just the goalie had an absolute shocker. And to me, the shot was that bad, he's thinking about where he's going to throw it. I think their crowd, you were there, it was from the TV, you could hear, they were up for it. And every time he got it, they were trying to get the ball out and they were trying to go. And to me, it looks like one of those where he's already looking like to the right-hand side, see where his fullback is, because I'm going to pick this up and it's going to go and we're going to be on the attack again. And he's got his fundamentals wrong. He hasn't, again, knee behind the ball, that kind of thing. He's a young goalie, and to be fair, I watched quite a bit of the Championship last year and he was really good, but he did have the odd moment in him where it was just, again, an absolute howler, because that's the reason Man United have sent him out on loan, to go and get these howlers out on someone else's watch, Their goalies having their own issues at the moment as well, and this Henderson's probably thinking, if David De Gea goes or whatever, I'm next in line. So United have sent him to Sheffield United to kind of iron these kinks out. Yeah. He's a good goalie. He's just again, we've got the rubber degree. And not only the fact that it goes through his legs, is that he's then off balance that he can't get back because he's leaning forward again because I think he's about to go. Yeah. I think he wants to get the ball gone. So it goes through his legs, and then he's leaning forward, and his weight's gone. It was rolling that slowly.
That moment, James, because Genie hits it, ooh, you get excited because someone's hit a shot, oh, it's gone on target, but as soon as it goes towards the goalkeeper, you go to switch off, and then all of a sudden, because we're behind it, the ball just re-emerges, and it happens in slow motion where the realisation dawns that he's not getting back to that, and the crowd just bubbles up and goes absolutely nuts. I mean, it's mad to think, isn't it? Genie Wijnaldum, remember when he couldn't score away from home?
Oh, he's doing it all
Tony does not. Okay.
Nah, but listen, it happens. Goalkeepers can make them type of mistakes. It doesn't matter how much you can train years on end to be the best goalkeeper of all time. You can just still have a lapse of concentration and make a silly mistake like that. It happens to the best of us in all situations. But who cares? We won.
Even with normal size arms, you can make a mistake.
I was going to say we've had the rubber the green a few times. Obviously,
that's what you need, though.
Yeah, you do.
We talk about it as being a league challenging team. We talk about Liverpool don't get enough luck. Boom, there's a nice little bit
it's
of
funny,
luck.
It's funny what I think about that though is because you're dead right. But I love the fact that if you're like there was Evertonians go out the Devil's Club and all this, like, and it's rigged and it's all fixed in our favour. That's just an added, it's cherry on top for me, Ross, because that's it. Man City fans, all the fans of teams that don't like us will just be ready, because they did it last season when the Palace keeper threw one in and Lloris threw one in and all this kind of stuff. You need these things to happen to go in your favour sometimes, because sometimes you can't win every game on your own terms.
Yeah, I think it's a help for confidence as well, because was it Pickford last season when he threw one into Origi? That spurred us on to a massive long run. We're still in that run. But, that's confidence with the players. They haven't played so well, but they still come out with 3 points now going ahead to another set of fixtures, which is quite difficult, you know, like two games a week for quite a long period, they might look back on that and go, actually, that kicked us on again to another level, winning, you know, and the gap's still, 5 points in the Premier League?
You know what's different as well is that when you... Well, you've got to be good enough to make these bits of luck make you win the game, if that makes sense. So, the other day, for example, Hugo Lloris has a shocker, doesn't he? And Danny Ings just tackles him and scores.
Yeah.
But the problem is Southampton can't defend.
Yeah.
So that one goal is all well and good, but you've left free on the other end.
Yeah.
And it happens, you know, flip it round, is that Sheffield United got it, sorry, Southampton got it against us, Danny Ings again. The problem is they'd already conceded a couple of goals. Is yeah. that if you stay in games and you keep the score at nil, that slice of luck might win you one. Is that, it's all right, you might, you know, like the other day, for example, Everton at 1-1 and Jordan Pickford just lets one go through his hands, his little T-Rex paper crisp hands. Is that, it's 1-1, so then, now you're losing. Where, you know what I mean? If you're, yeah. you've got, try and get yourself in a position where that point, where that mistake doesn't absolutely kill you, or vice versa. If you're in City's position, who weren't playing well, but their goalie pulled off an absolute couple of worldy saves, and they've kept themselves in the game.
Well, the Spurs one's interesting because obviously Lloris drops that absolute bollock, doesn't he? Yeah. But then he basically wins the game for them later on. by pulling saves.
And to be fair to Henderson, though, he does well on the Salah one as well. He closes the space. So I think the important thing to remember about this is, and again, we didn't play well and stuff, but the reason that there's a note next to Liverpool's name is because by hook or by crook, it wasn't like our jam was having to pull save after save. Like, again, I go back to Everton. Ederson had to pull two or three really good saves out, you know, from close range headers, or, you know, Calvert-Lewin from close range and stuff. Adrian, as well as Sheffield United played, it wasn't like he was making save after save.
Yeah.
I think he has one save that he has to tip around the post.
Yeah.
Which again, if Pickford's in goal, it's probably a goal.
Better
but,
chance of saving it with Zed.
Oh, yes, but you know, we defended a little bit last gasp at times. But it was all right. Like Robertson throwing himself in the way of a couple of blocks, Van Dijk block and stuff. It wasn't like Adrian was getting peppered, and that's because if you can keep that nil next to your name, you know, their name as long as you can, you might get a slice of luck. And it might be Virgil Van Dijk hitting one off the bar and Pickford throwing it in, or Hugo Lloris dropping it into his goal, or Henderson getting it through his legs. Just stay in the game.
Don't lose.
I think Liverpool teams of circa 2014-15 would have been 2-0 down. By 80 minutes. We've been to Swansea, we've been to Hull, all these crap teams who, with all due respect, had no right to beat Liverpool or shouldn't have been beating us. But because we hadn't performed and the mentality of the players wasn't there, the game was lost before you had a chance to win it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One last question from the viewer comments here, Ross, from Paul Allen. He says, do you think that some Liverpool players think it's an easy game, meaning they are more psyched up against bigger opposition? No disrespect to Sheffield United.
No, not at all. I just think that's the way that Sheffield United play. When you said time and time again, it's been, you know, post the game, people giving credit to them and the way that they play. I just don't think you can take anyone for granted these days. I don't think Liverpool do. I don't think we can afford to. I think, you know, I said before, the gap's obviously 5 points and we're on such a high. I just think it's, you know, it's one of them where it is difficult, and as we've all said, one of them where we would have lost in the past. I don't think you can play your style of football that we do at Anfield week in, week out. I think you have to change.
If I had to show you the league table here, Paul, look at that. So Sheffield United are in the same areas. Burnley, I mean, Man United play tonight, so that might change. But Wolves, Southampton, Everton, they're tougher ways that we know are tougher ways.
Yeah.
Sheffield, just because they've come up, that's the level of team that they've surrounded, they put themselves in now.
Yeah.
They're in that team of tougher way.
Yeah.
The Palace, the Burnley, it's not like...
Oh, me and Ben were saying, like, oh, this is like... They're in that clutch of teams. We see Watford, you know, I mean, Watford
West Brom
shite,
used to be in it, didn't they?
But you've got these teams and they've got these decent but small, compact stadia. They've got like rabid fan bases in the best possible, in the
decent
best
managers.
Possible way. Yeah, exactly. A good team ethic, all that kind of stuff. Like it is, it's a tough game. One player I want to talk about, James, before we start to wrap up, and it goes into this thing, this notion of off the back of what Steve's saying there. I felt like Liverpool were going to come out on top ultimately because once we made the change of formation, we brought Divock Origi on.
Yeah.
I thought we were miles better, and Origi takes loads of credit for that. I think we underestimate how good he is sometimes. And look, I wouldn't necessarily want him playing left wing against the best teams in the world.
Yeah,
but he's certainly good enough to do that job against the vast majority of teams in the Premier League.
100%, and it's players like Origi that you look at and you. They're just as vital as your starting players, and I know that sounds a bit mad because you think
we missed them.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, when it comes to games like this, you've got to jump into what you've got beneath that starting 11. You really, really do. You look at City, and the reason why they smash it every single year and win multiple trophies is because they're going out and buying Riyad Mahrez's to sit on the bench and just absolutely tear up for them. for them when he comes on. And even though Origi isn't that, we know he's a good player. We know he can get goals out of nowhere. And that is why we need a player like him, because he can come up with the goods.
He got stuck in a bit as well.
Exactly. He has the skill and ability, you know, like Ross mentioned before, doing step overs when he's coming on. It just brings a little bit of something to the game, adds that extra bit of flair, and that's what you need sometimes.
But he was getting stuck in when he rushed. Yeah. You know, around the halfway line, like he was, I don't know, that isn't the games of some of our lads, but he's, you know what, he's dead big and strong and stuff. And there were times he was just unsettling them.
He, for years, Ross, was just... He was just David and go, Mark too. You know, he's a lad who just wanted the ball in over the top and wanted to run to it and score goals. He couldn't hold the ball up to save his life. You know, he was a big lad, but he wasn't a physical lad. I think Steve's right. You know, he's 24 now. It's what happens. You fill out at that age. So it just doesn't stop.
I've been filling out since. Yeah.
But you know, he's tall. He's a good option aerially. He holds the ball up well. He's got a great touch.
Bell's a haircut now.
He's now got a boss haircut again. Well, he had a boss haircut before, to be fair, but
he looks like just a badass now. Yeah. Though.
He was. I loved his all round game. He looked like he belonged. He didn't look like, you know, just some this lad we're throwing on as like a joke or some cult figure. He's got an important role to play.
But I think James is right. I think he's best when he comes on as substitute, because he's got that injection of pace, the aggression, and especially when you've had like a hard game like that for 70 minutes. And you've had Manny running at you for 70 minutes. Like, you're going to be goosed. You're thinking, I'll get a break now. I know someone else is coming on to come bully me, basically. But I think he's still kind of seen as like a cult figure or a meme almost at times, isn't he? Because ultimately he's always judged on his last performance. And I think like Matip's a good example of this. We're not used to players improving when they've been at Liverpool for such a long period of time. I think obviously Matip's a case study for that. But so is Origi, because before he got his injury, he was decent and he is improving and stuff. But I just don't think he's always compared to the front three, and he's never going to be as good as them. You know, maybe he will be, but you know, that's the step up from it. He's always compared to them, where I think he's an impact player. I think that's when he's most dangerous. Mm-hmm. And he wants to start the next game, but you know, it must be hard for him.
Can I ask you something? The last time, again, I spoke before, the last time we won a game 1-0 in the league was Brighton, I think, in January. And then after that, we had the draws against like United, didn't we? We drew with Everton, we drew with West Brom and stuff. Do you think Paul Klopp's got a little bit braver? Because that was a brave sub. You know, he took his captain off centre mid to throw on another forward player. Do you think he's learned maybe, you know what, these 1 points have got to be 3 points?
Absolutely.
He's gambling the one to get the three. Yeah, because
Steve, we didn't. The reason we didn't win the title, we lost one game of football last season, so it wasn't, you don't lose the league title because you lose one game of football to Manchester City away from home. You can't possibly hinge the success of your season on going away to the best team in the league and not winning. That can't be what it is. It's the draws. The draws was what killed us last year. So you're dead right. We had to go a bit braver, and we. Klopp's first season we did, because I think he had nothing to lose. You know, I remember like Chelsea away, and we were doing really well in that game. We were winning. I think we threw Benteke on for a laugh. You know what I mean? Like, you throw an extra attacking players on just to keep going and keep doing that. I think because we've got the defence, sometimes you know we do, as you said, we trust that it'll work itself out, or it's fine. Look, keep a clean sheet and the rest might work itself out. But I think we had to. I think you're dead right. I think the games like this. These are our points now. You can't go away and go, that's a good draw. There's no such thing as good draws against the other 15 teams in the league.
Because I think, like, I look back at Goodison, I look back, you know, the United away game when the whole team were getting injured, or, you know, the West Ham and Leicester games, where it looked like, I'd say, maybe 75 minutes, Klopp was happy with, you know, we'll take the draw. Let's not get beaten if we win it good. I think the mentality has flipped to, these have got to be three points, because...
The only points Liverpool should be dropping in the league this season to any team, other than our big historic rivals, in which or derby games where it can be a bit mad, are when someone, it's tight, it's close, and you're having, and Napoli basically is that,
get when by ref,
you get a dodgy decision or someone sticks a worldie in, and what can you do? Because that's the only way City lost games last season, was Andros Townsend battered and won in from 40 yards when, you know, 100 times out of 100 that goes in the stands. That's the only way Liverpool should be dropping points against teams like this. And I keep saying, no disrespect to Sheffield United, but they know, you know, this is a newly promoted side. They've not come up to the Premier League going, we're taking 6 points off Liverpool. Liverpool this season. They haven't. They've come to give it the best go, but there's no expectation on that. And so the expectation all falls on Liverpool. I think you're dead right. So Klopp gets credit for that. Ross, we've now taken 99 points from our last 38 games.
Oh, didn't we win that friggin' league last?
No, no. I mean, the thing that's most encouraging about that is that if those... You're meant to be a bit slower when the season starts. So that's an impressive stat. It's a stat that means nothing. You don't get a league title for picking a random selection of 38 games throughout a stretch. But it does show you just how good we are now, how good we've been this season, because, you know, again, I without knowing what Man City have got, the fact that they've already dropped 5 points in the league this season suggests that would be a lower total than that.
Yeah, all the pre-season heads fallen off because we didn't win all our pre-season games. It's kind of gone to bed, hasn't it? But I think it was, some of that was justified in the fact that they weren't great performances or great results either. I think I was probably a little bit concerned about how we're going to start. The fact that we just got out and won 7 out of 7 and continued that form. Again, we've had some tough games. Well, Saturday was a classic example of a tough game, but coming through it, you know, and having that momentum to keep going when you've had like 3 months off, and people that have hardly had a pre-season, like the front three, didn't have one to keep going. You know, obviously, they've been away with Copa America and whatever the European one is in the summer. Just to keep going, I think, is incredible. I think Steve's right. I think we've adapted our tactics to go and win these smaller games.
Absolutely. Well, brilliant. Fantastic. And we had a very brief moment, me and Ben driving back from Sheffield, listening to the City-Everton game on the radio, and you're thinking, oh, the Ev might do something here. They might do something here. No, because the Ev are.
What I would say on that, right, is that Everton had a go. Mm. And I think that might be the blueprint of that. We're not going to beat Man City 1-0, but we might beat them 3-2 as Norwich did.
Yeah.
Let's go toe-to-toe, because what City remind me of now, with the injury problems that they've got, is when we had... You will remember Moreno and Dejan playing left side of our defence together almost.
Yeah.
It was almost like the Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Teams will keep poking at it, and they might get something of it out of it. Combine that with the fact that City are terrible at defending set pieces, there is a chink in their armour. You know what I mean? Listen, going forwards, they are amazing. They've got some of the, you know, De Bruyne, Sterling, Aguero, Jesus, name them all. But there is. It's almost like fighting the heavyweight boxer, you know, might have a little bit of a weak chin.
Yeah.
It's like there's a good chance you're going to get knocked out, but swing for it because there's a chance you might get him.
Absolutely.
I think Everton exposed that to an extent. You know, Everton should have scored 3 goals quite easily. Mm-hmm. They had clear-cut chances, and I watched that game on TV, and Gary Neville was all over it, saying, you know, this isn't right, something's not right here. And it shouldn't be right because they're playing Otamendi, Zinchenko, Fernandinho was part of the... You know, three of their back four. I hope, and again, I've been saying this for a while, is that just have a go at that.
Teams taking courage.
And it's due to us. You know, mm-hmm. team. We were well better than these teams. We rock up, but they'd have a go.
Yeah.
And you might get lucky, and you might get a 3-3.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Everton showed.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we've got the Champions League to look forward to this week, of course, gentlemen. Thank you very much. That is the final word on Liverpool, Sheffield United. Any thoughts that you've got, please do leave them in the comment section underneath. Thank you very much to The Athletic for sponsoring this show and podcast. Go to theathletic.co.uk. The link will be in the description underneath. You can get 50% off your yearly subscription. Very, very highly recommended. A brilliant app. Some great writing as well. Other than that, thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you for watching, liking, sharing, and subscribing. We'll see you all soon. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.